talking about perspective and getting it right, we've heard an awful lot of partisan commentary this week about the situation in Afghanistan. What I haven't heard on or seen on most of the mainstream media that I watch or read is the story from the standpoint of the Special Inspector General for Iraqi Reconstruction, John Sopko. I've been sharing his reports with you periodically on this program, and today we'll hear his memo on the lessons learned from America's longest war. That's assuming, ladies and gentlemen, we're capable of learning lessons. Hello, welcome to the show. I'm going to share with you today some of the memo from the Special Inspector General for Iraqi Reconstruction, John Sopko, about lessons learned from America's longest war. The U.S. government has now spent 20 years and $145 billion trying to rebuild Afghanistan, its security forces, civilian government institutions, economy, and civil society. The Department of Defense has also spent $837 billion on war fighting. During which 2,443 American troops and 1,144 Allied troops have been killed and 20,000 U.S. troops injured. Afghans have faced an even greater toll. At least 66,000 Afghan troops have been killed, more than 48,000 Afghan civilians have been killed, and at least 75,000 have been injured since 2001, both likely significant underestimates. The extraordinary costs were meant to serve a purpose, though the definition of that purpose evolved over time. At various points, the U.S. government hoped to eliminate al-Qaeda, decimate the Taliban movement that hosted it, deny all terrorist groups a safe haven in Afghanistan, build Afghan security forces so they could deny terrorists a safe haven in the future, and help the civilian government become legitimate and capable enough to win the trust of Afghans. Each goal, once accomplished, was thought to move the U.S. government one step closer to being able to depart. While there have been several areas of improvement, healthcare, maternal health, and education, progress has been elusive, and the prospects for sustaining this progress are dubious. The U.S. government has been often overwhelmed by the magnitude of rebuilding a country that at the time of the U.S. invasion had already seen two decades of Soviet occupation, civil war, and Taliban brutality. After conducting more than 760 interviews and reviewing thousands of government documents, our lessons learned analysis has revealed a troubled reconstruction effort that has yielded some success, but has also been marked by too many failures. Using this body of work, as well as the work of other oversight organizations, SIGAR has identified seven key lessons that span the entire 20-year campaign and can be used in other conflict zones around the globe. These lessons form the backbone of this report. 1. Strategy. The U.S. government continuously struggled to develop and implement a coherent strategy for what it hoped to achieve. The challenges U.S. officials faced in creating long-term, sustainable improvements raise questions about the ability of U.S. government agencies to devise, implement, and evaluate reconstruction strategies.
Guys, listen, guys, it is the Christmas season.
I know.
We have been booked. The Hat Pack has been booked to play
to
play Camp Rhino in Afghanistan.
Wow, and
we listen guys, we can't go to Afghanistan with old material. We can't go and sing them stuff from the old days.
Come on, why not?
We gotta come up with something new. We gotta come up with some new material. Well, we need some new songs, man.
I got
these
one,
are
I got,
our
I
boys.
Okay,
Tora Bora Bora, Tora Bora Lair, Tora Bora Bora, Bin Laden's hide away.
How are things in Tora Bora? Is that little prick Bin Laden there? You like that?
Yeah, I like that one. That's
how
good.
About?
Yeah. Yeah.
Come, Mr. Taliban, give us this banana.
Yeah.
Cut the dick free, and we all go home. You know?
Yeah, hey, I like that. That's got some spirit to it.
But we got to be specific, man. I mean, this is like a big opportunity. Bob Hope. He was made man in World War II. You know what I mean?
Right,
I mean,
right.
Bette Midler, you know, like she was made in Vietnam. So we can make ourselves over
there. Do
we have
to change our name to the Eight Boots?
Mm-hmm. No. The Hat Pack, that's it. No, I mean, the new movie.
The helmet pack.
What do they call those Afghan hats that all the Americans are wearing over there? You seen the pictures of them in the news?
What are those?
What are those called? Hadoons or
Hadoons.
Something? Hadoons. We're all going to wear like Hadoons. We're not going to wear turbans.
The Eight Hadoons?
Unfortunately, we better check that out.
The Hadoons? Pack?
The Hadoon Pack.
That sounds like, I don't
in
know,
Vegas tonight,
like
the Hadoon Pack.
Rated X.
I want to ask you something, man. Every time we have a war, particularly out here on the West Coast, when we have a war afterwards, the
people... Well, we have a war on the West Coast?
No. The people we have a war...
I took it literally. I'm sorry.
Oregonians must die.
Yeah.
You guys just spin out on everything
I
say.
Okay, go ahead. Yeah, we're spinning.
Beginning, middle, and end, remember? Remember inverted pyramid? I was a journalist.
Then we're going after Utah.
All right, okay.
Make your point.
Every time we have a war, the people we have a war against, whether it's the Japanese or the Vietnamese, they always end up moving here. Now, if we have a war against the Afghanis, that means the Afghanis
are going to move here
in their Hadoons.
Got a big chunk of Nevada for them.
I saw a show yesterday, or a feature in the news about... Some lady who had moved to Boise, Idaho. So she's getting close. Huh?
What do you mean?
Boise, Idaho. She'd moved to Boise, Idaho to start another life.
Oh, this is an Afghani?
And this woman was pretty. I could see her as my wife. She took it off her burqa, and boy, she had some fight. And I hide her, hidey, hidey, ho, hey, ho.
Hey, we got it, guys. Hey, hidey, hidey, ho. Hey, we got it, let's go. Fuck us. Camp Rhino, here we come.
The division of responsibilities among agencies did not always take into account each agency's strengths and weaknesses. For example, the Department of State is supposed to lead reconstruction efforts, but it lacked the expertise and resources to take the lead and own the strategy in Afghanistan. In contrast, the Department of Defense has the necessary resources and expertise to manage strategies, but not for large-scale reconstruction missions with significant economic and governance components. This meant no single agency had the necessary mindset, expertise, and resources to develop and manage the strategy to rebuild Afghanistan. For the U.S. government to successfully rebuild a country, especially one still experiencing violent conflict, civilian agencies will need the necessary resources and flexibility to lead in practice, not just on paper. This poor division of labor resulted in weak strategy. While initially tied to the destruction of al-Qaeda, the strategy grew considerably to include the defeat of the Taliban, an insurgent group deeply entrenched in Afghan communities, then expanded again to include corrupt Afghan officials who undermined U.S. efforts at every turn. Meanwhile, deteriorating security compelled the mission to grow even further in scope. U.S. officials believed the solution to insecurity was pouring even more resources into Afghan institutions. But the absence of progress after the surge of civilian and military assistance between 2000 and 2011 made it clear that the fundamental problems were unlikely to be addressed by changing resource levels. The U.S. government was simply not equipped to undertake something this ambitious in such an uncompromising environment, no matter the budget. After a decade of escalation, the United States began a gradual, decade-long drawdown that steadily revealed how dependent and vulnerable the Afghan government remained. 2. Timelines. The U.S. government consistently underestimated the amount of time required to rebuild Afghanistan and created unrealistic timelines and expectations that prioritized spending quickly. These choices increased corruption and reduced the effectiveness of programs. The U.S. reconstruction effort in Afghanistan could be described as 21-year reconstruction efforts rather than one 20-year effort.
Bad move.
You give them the eagle. It's not called giving them the bird.
That's
anymore.
Right. You give them the old eagle. Right.
Well, you know, this time, like back in Los Angeles around June, everybody had Laker flags on their cars.
Yeah.
Thousands of Laker flags. And now the Laker flags are gone. And they've got American flags as if we're playing in a new league.
Mm-hmm.
And it's as if we've won already. That's why the flags
American
went up.
League.
Because we won. And it turns out
all
we didn't
American
win
league.
After all. Because we all thought the war was going to be over by now. Remember, we were going to bomb them up to the Stone Age. And they were going to collapse. I think the word was impossible.
We were going to smoke them out and get them running.
Get them running.
And smoke them out and get them running.
Dead or alive.
Out of their caves. Of course, that'll be easy.
That'll be easy.
We'll just go right into that cave and get them. Yeah.
Right there in the Hindu Tush, I think they call it. It's that rump of land right up there on the top
of Afghanistan. It's easier to get a dead child out of a refrigerator on its side.
Yeah. Than it is to smoke a Taliban.
Taliban
out of
a cave.
Out of a hole on its side.
A hole on its side, you know.
It's real tough.
Because they don't have doors. That's the problem, see.
Here's another problem.
Well, wait a minute. The biggest problem.
They all
problem,
got the
wait,
same
wait.
Name.
We've been through
Muhammad.
Half an hour.
They're all called Muhammad.
That means Joe, you know.
But
it
wait,
Joe.
The huge problem Joe. Is this. We've been through 45 minutes of a radio show, and we have not come up with a title that has the word enduring in it. To characterize what we're doing.
Enduring.
Operation Enduring Comedy.
It didn't used to be enduring, Phil. Let me explain.
Originally,
all the moniker for all activities that takes place in Afghanistan was Infinite. Back in the Gulf War.
Wait a minute. No one can talk of infinite except God himself or a guy in a white suit.
But before that, back there in the time of the
infinite
Gulf War,
justice.
When we lobbed those tomahawks from the cruiser
the
Bill Maher.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Bill Maher, the cruiser Bill Maher, when those cowards sent them tomahawks in, it was called Operation Infinite Reach, to show them mullahs
there
that there was nowhere they could go, right?
Yeah.
So now they decided, okay, we got another war in Afghanistan. Another war in Afghanistan! That's enough to make anybody that's read history just shudder, right? The Persians tried it 400 years ago. The English tried it 100 years ago. The Russians are still healing their wounds.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, so we're going back in. You're right. We can't call it
infinite. You know,
it's not called infinite
one
justice.
One reason the Taliban is turning out to be a tougher opponent than we expected. You know why? Because in those caves, you can't get Bill Maher on your television.
You can. No.
That's one reason they're tough enough.
You have to develop your own sense of humor.
That's right.
Yeah, right.
And
you don't.
Well, I'm sorry, but the Taliban does not have a natural sense of humor.
No. Right.
Let us cut off her hand.
I heard one
she
joke.
She had shown her eyes. Let's cut off her hand.
I heard one Taliban joke
no.
that this guy told.
No,
yeah,
really.
This guy was talking. One of these interviewers was talking to a member of the Taliban. One of the intelligent ones. And they were hanging out together and drinking coffee and smoking and stuff. And he said to him, they got talking about women. And this American guy said, you know, I'm a leg man myself. And the Taliban guy said, I always look at a woman's eyes first. That's all he can see.
I have no choice.
That's all he can see.
Another reason why they have no sense of humor is that even if a Taliban woman laughs, all you can see is a slight shaking of the burqa.
That's right.
So you don't know if it's
the
wind come
fluttering.
Up out of the east, you know,
or
blowback.
Some
is it blowback
bad food.
Bad
strong
food?
Coffee.
Yeah, right. You don't know. You can't tell if she's laughing or just blowing back.
That's right.
So
why in the small American town of Billville is there some kind of cult which has to do with, Afghanistan, save us from Babylon?
Would you answer that for us?
I believe Billville is in exactly the center of the country, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Not?
Mm-hmm. It is.
Yeah, it's right there, right in the middle.
It's the most natural and normal American place.
American town.
Yeah. Why, we heard that song earlier.
Yeah, save
what?
Us from
does
Taliban.
That mean?
We didn't know when we recorded back in 1980.
Oh, are you one of the musicians that recorded it?
Well, I'm the censor that let it through. I wrote it originally.
Right.
Well, that's a musical title.
I wrote it the same way that they named it Operation Infinite, Infinite Justice, wasn't it, David?
Infinite Justice. But for a while there, Peter, after they dumped that, there was no name at all.
Yeah.
So we had no name for an operation against nameless and faceless enemy.
I think they considered calling it Operation Bullshit.
They did.
No. Operation Enduring Bullshit.
Enduring Bullshit. Bullshit.
No, Operation Infinite Bullshit.
Infinite
first.
Bullshit.
And unfortunately, that just caught up the whole idea of government itself.
Yeah.
So then they went...
You're right. We can't be boys in the Senate. We can't be criticizing ourselves.
No, now, here's the thing, guys, which is that's very nice that we are sensitive to the international Muslim feeling, you know, the theology saying, no, I'm sorry, only God can dispense infinite justice. Right. So we changed it. Back in 1944, we called the invasion of Normandy Overlord. Did we go around to the various burgs in Germany and the occupied countries and ask them if they had a theological problem with that?
Yeah,
no, we just hit the beach, right?
Yeah.
So we've gotten a lot more sensitive. Thanks
subtle,
to Bill Maher.
This is subtle.
Very
this
now, what I want to know is, can I wear Muslim... Can I wear Muslim?
Oh, that
I'd be offending somebody.
Only on a
Dude,
hot
but you're
day.
Not spelling it correctly. Muslim is spelled different than Muslim.
Well, it sounds the same, doesn't it?
Well,
mescaline. Can I take mescaline?
Yes.
And see God?
Yes.
I guess.
I believe.
Yes.
So. Well, not God. Operation Enduring God. We're calling him now.
That's right. Enduring God.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mescaline and Muslim and Muslim. Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. And
if you can endure your vision, you can take anything you want to.
U.S. officials often underestimated the time and resources needed to rebuild Afghanistan, leading to short-term solutions like the surge of troops, money, and resources from 29 to 2011. U.S. officials also prioritized their own political preferences for what they wanted reconstruction to look like, rather than what they could realistically achieve, given the constraints and conditions on the ground. Early in the war, U.S. officials denied the mission resources necessary to have an impact, and implicit deadlines made the task even harder. As security deteriorated and demands on donors increased, so did pressure to demonstrate progress. U.S. officials created explicit timelines in the mistaken belief that a decision in Washington could transform the calculus of complex Afghan institutions, power brokers, and communities contested by the Taliban. By design, these timelines often ignored conditions on the ground and forced reckless compromises in U.S. programs, creating perverse incentives to spend quickly and focus on short-term unsustainable goals that could not create the conditions to allow a victorious U.S. withdrawal. Rather than reform and improve, Afghan institutions and power brokers found ways to co-opt the funds for their own purposes, which only worsened the problems these programs were meant to address. When U.S. officials eventually recognized this dynamic, they simply found new ways to ignore conditions on the ground. Troops and resources continued to draw down in full view of the Afghan government's inability to address instability or prevent it from worsening.
The new U.S. commander in Afghanistan says the goal of starting an American pullback by July 2011 will depend on conditions at the time.
Uh-huh.
Will Petraeus betray us? In an interview taped for NBC's Meet the Press, General David Petraeus hedged a bit when asked by interviewer David Gregory if the summer deadline next year was non-negotiable. Petraeus says that President Barack Obama has expressed very clearly that he wants for me to give him my best military advice, and he said I would communicate that to him if sufficient progress is made. The guy's like blurbing all over the place. That's real life, he said. It's all about real life. So Petraeus conceded the U.S. mission in the war-weary South Asian nation is tough and will remain so. My question is, if he fails, if Petraeus fails, right, we have nothing left. There's no one to go to and nowhere else to make war. It's over.
You think so? You think if we end this one? No. War is now being done entirely by surrogates. Though the military will come back to their various bases in their various states, which provide employment for a lot of people, and they will come back and we will leave 20,000 murderous thugs in Afghanistan taking, you know, guarding our ambassadorial staff of thousands of people. We're never going to leave Afghanistan. We built too many buildings in Afghanistan. We've, you know, and besides, if the Chinese get all that titanium and stuff up in the North Way. I don't know. We're really screwed.
Like, I really care. Okay, Defense Secretary Robert Gates is calling for a change in attitude on Capitol Hill to help the thousands of civilians that we've got in Afghanistan. He's blaming the Congress for not giving them enough money, and that's why things aren't going so well.
These are the independent contractor guys, right?
And finally, since 2004, the number of soldiers going AWOL has increased by 234%. And it says that the rate has been rising at the rate of more than 5,000 a year for the last 5 years. Good order and discipline are on the decline, the report says.
That's because they had to cut down the standards for people who joined the Army.
And the Marines. We're looking for one fine man or one, whatever that was. Now we're looking for anybody we can scrape off the streets. So it's not a good scene. We are losing Afghanistan. Yes, we can't.
3, sustainability. Many of the institutions and infrastructure projects the United States built were not sustainable. Reconstruction programs are not like humanitarian aid. They're not meant to provide temporary relief. Instead, they serve as a foundation for building the necessary institutions of government, civil society, and commerce to sustain the country indefinitely. Every mile of road the United States built, and every government employee it trained, was thought to serve as a springboard for even more improvements and to enable the Reconstruction effort to eventually end. However, the U.S. government often failed to ensure its projects were sustainable over the long term. Billions of Reconstruction dollars were wasted as projects went unused or fell into disrepair.
Okay, fellas, get ready. Get ready. That was very good, Donnie.
Thank you, Bob.
Very good, Marty. Bubba, you were a little flat. Watch it, Bubba. Bubba!
Oh, yeah, my blood's so mad. Feels like coagulating. This whole crazy world is just too frustrating. And you tell me over and over and over again, my friend.
Hello, Afghanistan, and all you quail fighters in the great turban sprawl. This is me, Abu Dada, with Radio Free Pashtun. So wind up your wok mullahs for more 15,000-pound daisy-cutting hits like What You Hear Now, Evening Distraction by Big Daddy and the Chipmunkies. But next, in another language, from our old-time, old fireside channel, get out of the way for Operation Enduring Fools in Space!
Demands to make fast projects incentivized U.S. officials to identify and implement short-term projects with little consideration for host government capacity and long-term sustainability. U.S. agencies were seldom judged by their project's continued utility, but by the number of projects completed and dollars spent. Over time, U.S. policies emphasized that all U.S. reconstruction projects must be sustainable, but Afghans often lacked the capacity to take responsibility for projects. In response, the U.S. government tried to help Afghan institutions build their capacity, but those institutions often could not keep up with U.S. demands for fast progress. Moreover, pervasive corruption put U.S. funds sent through the Afghan government at risk of waste, fraud, and abuse. These dynamics motivated U.S. officials to provide most assistance outside Afghan government channels. While expedient, the approach meant that Afghan officials were not getting experience in managing and sustaining U.S. reconstruction projects over the long term. As a result, even when programs were able to achieve short-term success, they often could not last, because the Afghans who would eventually take responsibility for them were poorly equipped, trained, or motivated to do so.
This is the empire, guys. We're living in the middle of the empire. They formed the Office of Strategic Influence between now and the last time we had a show. They're so screwed up over, like, trying to take the hearts and minds of the rest of the people who don't believe in the war on terrorism. Can you believe that there are people?
What, the OSI? Is that what it is?
The OSI. They don't believe. They don't believe.
Oh, that's just run-up music. It's just leading into the next commercial. You can go ahead and talk for another 40 seconds,
Pete. They don't believe in the war on terrorism. Can you believe that? Look, we have dropped billions of dollars worth of bombs and pork-free food on the Afghanis, right? We have destroyed the Al-Qaeda terrorist camps, plus a few collateral villages. We have instituted a democratic government that has only lost one cabinet member to an angry mob, and still they don't love us. I don't get it. What are we going to do?
Four, personnel. Counterproductive civilian and military personnel policies and practices thwarted the effort. The U.S. government's inability to get the right people into the right jobs at the right times was one of the most significant failures of the mission. It is also one of the hardest to repair. U.S. personnel in Afghanistan were often unqualified and poorly trained, and those who were qualified were difficult to retain. DOD police advisors watched American TV shows to learn about policing. Civil affairs teams were mass-produced via PowerPoint presentations. And every agency experienced annual lobotomies as staff constantly rotated out, leaving successors to start from scratch and make similar mistakes all over again.
It's kind of strange to have a guy sitting here with a bottle in front of him.
Well, I'd rather have a bottle in front of me than a frontal lobotomy.
These dynamics had direct effects on the quality of reconstruction. There were often not enough staff to oversee the spending, and certainly not enough who were qualified to do so. This was particularly true for civilian agencies such as State or the U.S. Agency for International Development, which should have been leading the effort, but were unable to meaningfully perform that role. This compelled the better-resourced Department of Defense to fill the void, creating tensions with civilian agencies that often had different ideas, but fewer staff to offer.
This is David Osmond for Radio Free Oz, and I'm backstage just off the main set of Afghan Gladiator. That's that hot new TV show that gives returning vets from AFPAC a chance to go back for another tour of counterinsurgency. Exciting show. And here's the winner of tonight's contest, the former National Guardsman who already revolved through 8 tours over there. It's PTSD First Class Crystal McStanley. Well, tell us something about yourself, Chris.
Yes, sir. Well, I joined the Marines when I was 18 for on-the-job training, and it sure was because, 3 days later, I was in AFPAC.
Oh,
really? Want to go back, but they said I'm too used up, so I guess I showed them up.
Well, I guess you did. Well, you must have brought home some souvenirs or something from your last tour, right?
Yeah, PTSD, night sweats, the crabs, and I used to be a woman, but the Army took care of that last time I looked.
Oh, really? Well, that's sad, but yet there's something comfortably ironic about that, too, Chris. But tell us all about the Afghan Gladiator Challenge.
Well, sir. First, there's the pop-up firefights. Uh-huh. I get 5 points for every turban, and I lose 5 for every CD. That's collateral damage. Yeah. I ended up just over even.
Uh-huh.
Then there's the IED swamp thing. I had to drain the swamp and replace it with a girls' school without blowing anybody up.
Nation building.
Uh-huh. Yeah, right. Uh-huh. And then comes bribe the warlord stuff,
bribe
you know.
Warlord.
It's tee-up or get terminated on the Kabul to freaking nowhere highway. Cost me an arm and a leg.
Oh, really?
Glad it wasn't mine.
Well, me too. Say, you survived those first 3 challenges, but how did the big show end up?
It ended up, man, in the poppy field. You know, you have to dream your way out of it.
Really? It's kind of like the war itself, huh? Well, tell me, how'd you do it?
Well, I use my big jar of urefratricate. It's a meth-enhanced electrolyte replacement system, and it keeps me up all day. Because, yeah. See, over there, they own the day and the night. It really doesn't matter.
Well, so you won something, though, besides the tour to go back.
Yeah,
right?
I get this case of Bud Light Lime. That's enough to get the general from Paris to Berlin and then Hummer.
The Army gave you a Hummer?
Well, just the down payment, but it's got robusted air conditioning and skin seats.
Well, so that's your job. It's not a tough one. You're just driving the General, isn't
it? No,
there, huh?
Sir. Our orders are to clear hold and forget about it.
Well, what about winning the war?
There's no winning, sir. It's just survival.
Well, PTSD, First Class Crystal McSally, that's just what you've done on Afghan Gladiator today. So from me to you, good luck on your way back to Stan.
Thanks.
By the way, all those countries over there are called Stan something. Now, what does that mean? Did they tell you what that means?
Yeah, sir, Stan is Muslim for pain. Afghani pain, Uzbeki pain, Paki pain, Missouri pain.
Well, no pain, no gain.
Yeah, well, lots of one and none of the other. But it's a good war, sir.
Uh-huh.
I already signed up my unborn children to go over there and forget what I'm going to go over and clear and hold.
Well, it sounds like you've got it all under control, Stan. And this is David Osmond for Radio Free Oz here at the Bob Hope Studios in Burbank, California.
Five, insecurity. Persistent insecurity severely undermined Reconstruction efforts. The absence of violence was a critical precondition for everything U.S. officials tried to do in Afghanistan. Yet the U.S. effort to rebuild the country took place while it was being torn apart. For example, helping Afghans develop a credible electoral process became even more difficult as insecurity across the country steadily worsened, intimidating voters, preventing voter registration, and closing polling stations on Election Day. In remote areas where the Taliban contested control, U.S. officials were unable to make sufficient gains to convince frightened rural Afghans of the benefits of supporting their government. Insecurity and the uncertainty that it spawns have also made Afghanistan one of the worst environments in the world to run a business. The long-term development of Afghan security forces likewise saw a number of harmful compromises, driven by the immediate need to address rising insecurity. The danger meant that even programs to reintegrate former fighters faltered, as ex-combatants could not be protected from retaliation if they rejoined their communities. Six, context. The U.S. government did not understand the Afghan context and therefore failed to tailor its efforts accordingly. Effectively rebuilding Afghanistan required a detailed understanding of the country's social, economic, and political dynamics. However, U.S. officials were consistently operating in the dark, often because of the difficulty of collecting the necessary information.
And all that are trying to do, shows, to sponsor shows like the good old days of Texaco Hour and all that.
It's all
hey,
product
look,
placement.
We got a pilot. Can we put that on? And you'll see what I'm talking about.
From the Product Placement Network?
I think it's called That Kooky Coke Show.
Could we just roll the tape
sure
right
that Kooky
now?
Kooky
it's
Show?
That big Humvee.
Oh, Afghanistan. Oh, Afghanistan. Oh, oh, Afghanistan, where bombs keep dropping from our planes. And the desert heat is really neat, but will soon cool off in winter rains. Hey!
Hey, guys, is that a mirage, or do I spy a kid with a sign up ahead?
Oh, I see him too, Sergeant.
And it looks like he's waving something.
You're right, Reverend. Hey, Ahmed, pull over. Let's check this boy out.
Let me get my camera. Could be a story here.
Right you are, Miss Olson.
Oh, I'm right? Am I Sergeant Blockbuster? I thought us reporters were part of the left-wing conspiracy.
Come on, children. Let's leave the pot shots for the Taliban stragglers, okay?
Pull up right here. Okay.
Maps to Bin Laden's caves. Get your maps here. Maps to the Al-Qaeda.
Isn't he cute? Look over here. Smile. Oh, God, it's...
Hey, kid, I'll take a map. How much?
10,000 Afghanistan dollars.
That's 25 cents American, Sarge.
Okay, Olson, throw him a handful from that bag of laundered cash we confiscated in Spin Bull Doctor.
Doctor, oh, yeah, sure. Oh, it's still wet. Here you go, Kitty.
I'll protect you, pretty lady. Oh, here is a map for you, too.
Oh, how sweet.
Hey, kid, isn't that a bottle of Coke I see sticking out of the sand there?
Yes, sir, it's mine. It's mine, sir.
I don't know about you guys, but I'm parched.
Well, I could go for a slug.
A shot of sugar and caffeine.
Better than a wafer and wine, Reverend.
No, it's not for sale, you see. It's mine.
Come on, Abdul, everything's for sale.
But it's mine.
Oh, we'll give you more of this pretty, wet Afghan money for it. Duck, you must be thirsty for cash out here.
I'll even give you this shiny new quarter with a choking president on it.
Now, just a minute, Sergeant Blockbuster, but isn't that your good luck piece?
Come on, Reverend Godhead. You don't believe in superstitious nonsense like that, do you?
Well, I don't believe in that kind of superstitious nonsense, no.
This here rifle is my lucky piece.
Ooh.
Here, kid, real American Monopoly money. Buy yourself a government position. Now, give me that.
Hey, please,
all right,
please,
all right.
No, no, no.
Let's roll,
let's roll, Bobby.
It is mine.
Well done, son. Oh, hurry up. I'm really hot.
You said it, baby, not me.
Watch it, soldier.
I am watching it.
Listen, I think we better open that bottle now, troops.
Okay, Pastor. Oh, ouch. I guess twist-off caps haven't been invented here yet. Got a church key, Reverend?
Of course I do, my son, but be careful how you'll use it, huh?
Huh?
Well,
I think he's afraid that our driver might think you're out to circumcise him.
Oh, the unkindest cut of all, huh? These folks sure have a lot to learn. Get ready for some pure Coca-Cola pleasure.
Now pause that refreshes.
Things go better with Coca-Cola.
Things go better with...
Tried to tell them it was mine.
It's that Kooky Coke Show, Saturday night at 8 on XBC. Be there!
The U.S. government also clumsily forced Western technocratic models onto Afghan economic institutions, trained security forces in advanced weapon systems they could not understand, much less maintain, imposed formal rule of law in a country that addressed 80-90% of its disputes through informal means, and often struggled to understand or mitigate the cultural and social barriers to supporting women and girls. Without this background knowledge, U.S. officials often empowered power brokers who preyed on the population or diverted U.S. assistance away from its intended recipients to enrich and empower themselves and their allies. Lack of knowledge at the local level meant projects intended to mitigate conflict often exacerbated it and even inadvertently funded insurgents. 7. Monitoring and evaluation. U.S. government agencies rarely conducted sufficient monitoring and evaluation to understand the impact of their efforts. Monitoring and evaluation, M&E, is the process of determining what works, what does not, and what needs to change as a result. Conceptually, M&E is relatively straightforward. In practice, it is extremely challenging. This is especially true in a complex and unpredictable environment like Afghanistan, where staff turnover is rapid, multiple agencies must coordinate programs simultaneously, security and access restrictions make it hard to understand a program's challenges and impact, and a myriad of variables compete to influence outcomes. The absence of periodic reality checks created the risk of doing the wrong thing perfectly. A project that completed required tasks would be considered successful, whether or not it had achieved or contributed to broader, more important goals. SIGAR's extensive audit work on sectors spanning health, education, rule of law, women's rights, infrastructure, security assistance, and others collectively paints a picture of U.S. agencies struggling to effectively measure results while sometimes relying on shaky data to make claims of success.
Would you like to settle this war right now?
Yeah,
I mean, okay. Let's look between two idiots. Look, you're an idiot and I'm an idiot.
Okay,
we both know
but
that.
I'm the head idiot of my country.
Okay, you can be the head idiot of your country if I can be the head idiot of my country.
I'll grant you
what
that.
What about all those little countries
look
in between?
Those two dumb guys.
Okay, what did you say?
Well, what about all these little countries in
those
between?
Those little countries, look at them. They're full of idiots.
Those guys
they're
are
full of idiots just like us.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Hey, you little idiots, any of you idiots over there want to come over here with us idiots and solve this war?
We're the heads of the pin trust over here.
We're not smart enough to understand about that kind of stuff.
Oh, we're the dummies.
Well,
I'm the dumbest guy in my country.
That's true.
And you're the dumbest guy in your country.
I'll come and live in your country.
Then
I won't have to be the dumbest guy anymore.
I'll go over to your country, too. It'll be great. Those Moscow girls really knock me out.
Golly.
They leave the West behind.
The U.S. government's M&E efforts in Afghanistan have been underemphasized and understaffed because the overall campaign focused on doing as much as possible as quickly as possible, rather than ensuring programs were designed well to begin with and could adapt as needed. As a result, the U.S. government missed many opportunities to identify critical flaws in its interventions or to act on those that were identified. These shortcomings endangered the lives of U.S., Afghan, and coalition government personnel and civilians and undermined progress towards strategic goals. In conclusion, this report raises critical questions about the U.S. government's ability to carry out reconstruction efforts on the scale seen in Afghanistan. As an inspector general's office charged with overseeing reconstruction spending in Afghanistan, Sigar's approach has generally been technical. We identify specific problems and offer specific solutions. However, after 13 years of oversight, the cumulative list of systemic challenges Sigar and other oversight bodies have identified is staggering. As former National Security Advisor Stephen Hadley told Sigar, "We just don't have a post-conflict stabilization model that works. Every time we have one of these things, it is a pickup game. I don't have confidence that if we did it again, we would do any better."
Mr. President, I'd like to introduce you to
Barney.
Hello. Always glad to talk to you.
Barney.
You know, when you clock the human race with the stopwatch of history, it's a new record every time.
That's a cute story, Mr. President,
and who loses? People like you.
Barney!
Well, and you.
Clem.
People who are altered.
Stop, Mr. President, please stop. Now, I know it means nothing to you. I'm only a clone, but you've got such a wonderful job, and you're doing it so well. You know, we bozos have a saying. When you put on the nose,
could you state
it
that
grow-
as a question? Read to. Thank you very much.
Barney!
You'll be getting a handsome simulfax copy of your own words in the mail soon.
No.
And my reply.
By golly, Mr. President,
thank
you're
you for
beneficent.
Question. Exit right to Funway.
Yes, sir.
Mr. President, I'd like to introduce you to...
Clem.
Hello. Always nice to see you.
Clem.
You know, the springhead of this country...
Stop, Mr. President. Mr. President, stop, please. Now, listen to me. This is worker speaking. Hello.
Hello. How are you? State maintenance question.
Fine, thanks. No. Read me Dr. Memory.
Amrad is not sure I understand you fully. Could you state that as a question, please?
Read me Dr. Memory?
Systat, direct readout, uptime 901. I've been awake for 9 hours.
Hey, man, ask him a question.
44 seconds.
Amofax shuffle time?
Less than 1% of freight drain.
Log fired.
5 jobs, 2 detached.
Minimum entry, gate 1.
Totaling balance national debt, 3, 4, 5, 6 boxcars.
Gate closed.
Okay, all right, you're doing fine, but this is a flip-flop, Springhead.
Flip-flop?
Right. Now, I'm going to ask you a question that you won't be able to answer.
I'm not sure I understand you fully.
Log out run off memory.
A. The system is less energetic if domains of opposite direction alternate.
NBM read MacNam. PNP read MacNam password.
Maximum output resource yield.
Illegal entry.
Try again.
Yes, we're going to try again. Open your gate, Doctor.
Sis. Pop.
That's right.
Dad. Bob. Mom.
Yes.
Dad. Dud.
It's repeating.
Did.
Got little squiddy eyes.
Ma'am. Ma'am. Ma'am.
Ma'am.
Ma'am.
Ma'am.
Ma'am.
Ma'am.
Ma'am.
Ma'am.
Ma'am.
Ma'am. Memory.
Direct readout, Dr. Memory.
Clem.
Thank you. Now, Doctor, I'm speaking to you, Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Something the leprechauns asked me when I was a sprout in Indiana has always puzzled me. Doctor, question. evaluate. Why does the porridge bird lay his egg in the air?
Laugh, runway makes no read. Unhappy MacNam, unhappy MacNam. Systat uptime 9.
I have been awake for 9 hours, 2 minutes, 36 seconds.
At answer here,
I'm as tired of it as you are, and I hope that our children will come to love us again in some better world than this.
Damn.
This was equally apparent after the Vietnam War, when a war-weary and divided country had little appetite to engage in another similar conflict. After Vietnam, for example, the U.S. Army disbanded most active duty civil affairs units and reduced the number of foreign area officers, the Army's regionally focused experts in political military operations. Special forces moved away from counterinsurgency and instead focused on conducting small-scale operations in support of conventional forces. And USAID's global staff was gradually cut by 83%. In other words, according to former Vice Chief of Staff of the Army General Jack Keane, quote, "After the Vietnam War, we purged ourselves of everything that had to do with irregular warfare or insurgency, because it had to do with how we lost that war. In hindsight, that was a bad decision," unquote. After all, declining to prepare after Vietnam did not prevent the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Instead, it ensured they would become quagmires. Rather than motivating the U.S. government to improve, the difficulty of these missions may instead encourage U.S. officials to move on and prepare for something new. According to Robert Gates, former Secretary of Defense, from 2006 to 2011, quote, "I have noticed too much of a tendency towards what might be called next war-itis, the propensity of much of the defense establishment to be in favor of what might be needed in a future conflict. Overall, the kinds of capabilities we will most likely need in the years ahead will often resemble the kind of capabilities we need today." The post-Afghanistan experience may be no different. As this report shows, there are multiple reasons to develop these capabilities and prepare for reconstruction missions in conflict-affected countries. One, they are very expensive. For example, all war-related costs for U.S. efforts in Afghanistan, Iraq, and Pakistan over the last two decades are estimated at $6.4 trillion. Two, they usually go poorly. Three, widespread recognition that they go poorly has not prevented U.S. officials from pursuing them. Four, rebuilding countries mired in conflict is actually a continuous U.S. government endeavor, reflected by efforts in the Balkans and Haiti, and similar efforts currently underway in Mali, Burkina Faso, Somalia, Yemen, Ukraine, and elsewhere. Five, large reconstruction campaigns usually start small, so it would not be hard for the U.S. government to slip down this slope again somewhere else, and for the outcome to be similar to that of Afghanistan. Another key factor was mendacity. Top-ranking U.S. military leaders, quote, "knew how bad the Afghan military was, but they tried to keep such problems hidden." Every time we had a problem with the Afghan military, we changed the goalposts. The U.S. military changed the goalposts and made it easier to show success. And then, finally, when they couldn't even do that, they classified the assessment tool. He cautioned part of the problem with setting up Afghanistan for success hinged on Washington's refusal over almost 20 years to plan for long-term success. "We've highlighted time and again we had unrealistic timelines for all of our work," he said.
"The time is now 5:55.
What about the clock,
time
lady?
To continue to
leave
make
it.
News
they can tell if you turn it off. Look
new
out,
city's
you dummy. Hold his head up. I'll
system.
Come back for the loop-de-loop.
Who are you calling a dummy?"
Pointing to his reports over the past 12 years. Four-star generals, four-star military, four-star ambassadors, forced the U.S. aid agency for international development to try to show success in short timelines, which they themselves knew were never going to work. These short timelines, which have no basis in reality except for the political reality of the appropriations cycle, or whatever is popular at the moment, are dooming us to failure. That, unfortunately, is a problem not just with Afghanistan, he said. I think you find it in other countries where we've gone in. Harsh, wouldn't you say? That's how it looks from here. How does it look from over there?
From Afghanistan Public Radio, where the wine club is closing, we're drinking what's left.
From the abandoned American television truck in downtown Kabul, being disassembled as we speak, I'm Mahmoud.
And I'm Hamid. We're Scrim and Scram, like getting the heck out of here, brothers. Welcome to a very late-stage edition of Karzai Talk.
Today's program comes to you with the assistance of the Taliban Foundation, where the future is today.
Welcoming our new sponsor. Mm-hmm. And well, my younger brother, it's truly a week to ponder the pace of change.
True words have never been read off a script by my younger brother. I'll say this. With the Taliban taking one provincial capital after another, mm-hmm. there has never been a better week to be a seller of Toyota off-road vehicles.
Good week to be a buyer, too. Mm-hmm. Any Tundra you don't sell in the next 2 weeks is going to end up as a Taliban tank.
Hiya, friends. Ralph Sportsport Motors, the world's largest new used and used one with dealership, Ralph Sportsport Motors, here in the city of Emphysema. Let's just look at the extras on this fabulous car. Wire wheel, spoke fenders, two-way sneeze through wind vents, star set mudguard, sponge-coated, edible steering column, chrome fender dents, and factory air-conditioned air from our fully factory-equipped air-conditioned factory. It's a beautiful car, friends, with doors to match. Birch's blacklist says this automobile was stolen, but for you, friends, a complete price, only $2,500. And easy monthly payments for the rest of the week, twice a week, and never on Sunday.
I'll take it. I can't wait to get away from it all.
Well, okay, fine. Let's just take a look inside your beautiful new home. Come on in.
Thanks.
As you can see, this car's been fully equipped with a complete line of extras designed with your mind in mind. Wow. Here, for instance, an all-weather climate control in red, blue, or green with a special oxygen danger indicator level.
Gee whiz.
And here, of course, your own personal remote control picture-sized color TV with matching brass knob. Just reach above the bar and press the button right there under the handy laminated imitation Mason at Wild West gun rack with a look of real wood for the channel of your choice.
Ralph, can I try it?
Sure.
Don't we do it in the road here at Route Ford Motor here in the city of Give it a go.
I like those colors. Isn't that nice?
Nice. Can you get UHF?
No,
I don't believe in flying saucers. A little blue halo around my head.
Can I get a little more orange in his face?
Sure.
Right there. Where? Right?
No, move that.
Under the trigger here?
Yeah, that's right.
Wait a second. Got to get the safety off. Oh. Look at that blue horse.
All right. Yeah.
That's, I think I've
look at the muscles on that dude. He's got muscles in his ear.
That's Steve Reeves.
No.
No. There.
No,
that's Steve.
That's
Reeves.
Agnes Moorehead.
Oh yeah, I thought I've seen this one. Where's the bathroom?
Huh? Oh, right next to the radio. They're completely modulated with dual left and right stereo speakers and two compatible frequencies. Your AM. By the way, we also have FM right here.
FM over here? Let me try it.
I should say my brother and I have to apologize for any noise in the background on today's program.
Yes, they're stripping our studio for parts. And yes, it's a good idea not to ask who they are. Hello, you're on Karzai Talk.
Hello, this is Ashraf, a longtime president of Afghanistan. I think I've called before. My files have been biked away. So.
Ashraf, President Ghani, of course we know who you are.
As my younger brother used to describe you, sir, you're the one who still believed the surge didn't refer to COVID.
Well, I wish I had the luxury at this moment of fake laughter, but given our background of mutual acrimony, I wouldn't be calling if this weren't an existential emergency.
Well, my esteemed successor, our airwaves are yours for as long as there are.
Well, I must admit I don't listen every day.
Join the club.
Or really any day.
Join the club.
But I'm sure you've long since made plans for, shall we say, strategic relocation if and when the time came or comes.
Well, let me say on behalf of my brother that as soon as he got out of government, he was once again able to make long-range plans.
Well, easier for you, Hamid, than for me to leave. I mean, I'm just wondering if there might be a shipping container you've got in your plans that might submit itself to the installation of some air holes.
I know Mahmoud has some tools.
Well, a couple of my international customers every once in a while needs a Toyota to do a cockpit, sure.
Well, as long as I know that option is available, I can start having my staff shopping for very portable food.
Sure, no need to hash this all out where anybody could hear it.
And nobody does.
You never know. This could end up in a time capsule.
Mm-hmm. Its best chance at an audience is if Elon Musk blasts it to Mars.
Mr. President, good luck. Thanks for the call.
He sounded just a bit terrified.
Mm-hmm. I haven't heard him so frightened since Dick Cheney invited him to go hunting. Hello, you're on Cars I Talk.
Hello, this is Margo at the Taliban Central. This is a special VIP advisory that your location is targeted for attack next Thursday, August 12th, sometime between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. Your local cable provider can give you less specific details. I cannot take your feedback. I'm late for my burqa fitting. Goodbye.
Well, you can't say the Americans didn't influence our culture in the 2 decades they were here. Hello, you're on Cars I Talk.
Hey, Ham Heed, it's George W. calling you from the ranch. Long-time ex-president, second-time caller. That's for memory. All the files are locked up for 50 years. That was Cheney's idea.
Mr. President, this is Mahmoud. Thank you for calling, sir.
That's it?
Sir, it's Hamid. Please go on.
Well, thanks to someone. Look, I got to say, nobody feels worse than I do about how all this worked out. We got attacked by the evildoers. Mm-hmm. We had to strike back, or everybody in the world would think that they could just knock down our big buildings and that, pardon the expression, that blows a big hole in the old economy. So,
sir, this is Mahmoud again.
Hey, Laura says hi.
Sir, I think what rankles us a little bit on this side of the Hindu Kush is that after just 2 years of our war, you pulled out a lot of troops and resources out of here to go do another war.
Hey, good point, Mama Duda. We were just so impressed with how much good progress you people were making. We thought, okay, onward, next. Nobody said it was going to be a quagmire or even said what that was. I mean, nobody in their right mind's eye saw this as a 20-year kind of deal, but, I mean, a heck of a lot of American money flowed your way. You guys must be doing okay, right?
Sir, we are seriously discussing leaving our homeland in the very near future.
Well, sure, they tell me you can get so much more house for the buck in Tajikistan. But look, anyway, fellas, especially you, Hamdeed, I just want you to know how sorry I am about how it all turned out, so I'm sending you a little something as soon as you have a new address. You let me know, we'll slap in the good old U.S. mail. Or if there's Afghan mail.
Sir, if I may ask, what is this gift?
I did a painting of your brother, the former president, in the tub. That's kind of my thing now. The critics say I'm in my tub period.
Well, I very much look forward to it, sir, and I shall hang it above my actual tub. But now I'm sorry to you. We're out of time.
Okay, well, Laura still says hello.
And my brother says thanks for the call.
We had help today from Taliban Moving and Storage. More moving less storage.
Legal services for cars I took from the law firm of Ketchum & Newcomb. Just another 30 seconds.
Looking forward to opening a liquor store in Huntington Beach, California. I'm Hamid.
And I'm Mahmoud.
Goodbye from Cars I Took. This is APR, Afghanistan Public Radio.